Human Services and Housing will be in order, and a quorum is present. It's Monday, January 26, 2015, and one item on the agenda today is Senate File 4. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Is it coming across? Okay, great. Thank you. Senate File 4 is the first bill, and I want to emphasize that, it's the first bill on reforms to our current child protection system. Before presenting the bill, I'd like to make a few preliminary remarks, as would Senator Julie Rosen, who, with me, represents the Senate on the Governor's Task Force. First, in your packet is a list of members and the experience they brought to this task force. I wanted to provide this because I wanted you to review it and see the breadth and experience and perspective that is on the task force. Many of the constituencies you represent had representation on the task force, and they were all engaged in our vigorous review of our current system, the current research on methods by other states, the use of alternative responses to traditional investigation, the quality of the tools we use in assessment, the differences that exist between county approaches and county resources, patterns of reports, and the type of response that is made in counties based on their geography and on the diversity of the community. These recommendations today are only the beginning of our recommendations. During the task force meetings, many issues were raised in discovery from experts and from the many people who throughout the state came or wrote to us about something of concern to them in the child protection system. Or concerns were raised from citizens who came and appeared during the open mic time of our committee hearings. These and many other concerns continue to be discussed for further agreement and eventual recommendation to the legislature. So, this is not a complete answer to the concerns that we have uncovered or that you have, but it is a beginning and represents those changes the task force agrees should be implemented. At a recent educational meeting that I attended on the law and the legislature, I heard concerns in a presentation expressed that revisions of the system are being considered based on a singular report in the press, warning against an overreaction by the legislature to a single press report. I am sure that you have heard this type of description of our work on the task force in one form or another. This is unfortunate and inadequate characterization of our work and of the hard work of the children's defense organizations who have been trying to get our attention over many sessions. It is unfortunate that it took the death of Eric Dean to get movement on a long-standing concern about the need to improve our system that's expressed from many of our reporters, our teachers, the courts, and those working very hard with increasing cuts to their funding to protect vulnerable children. We have discovered how the system's funding has diminished over the past 10 years, how counties with different tax capacities spend very differently on child protection, how different outcomes are for families from our African American communities and our American Indian communities. All of these exposed because we are taking time to review our child protection system. If the reporting of Eric Dean's death and the missteps along the way to this horrific outcome causes us to look harder, good for the press, and good for the governor for initiating this effort to improve our efforts to protect vulnerable children in situations where they have no power or ability to assert for themselves. Given that introduction, I would be remiss if I did not say that we discovered many, many good things about our system and its success as compared to other states. We have deep admiration and appreciation for those who are doing the hard work of investigating and working for children in homes where there are difficult circumstances ranging from poverty to immature parents to significant pathology and sometimes criminology. We honor those workers and have as our goal increasing the resources they need to do their job better. We hope that these recommendations are heard as an increasing of their capacity to do their job successfully rather than casting blame. We believe an approach that builds on family assets is good for children. When assessment is the assessment of the family demonstrates that the capacity exists. We seek to continue to discuss the use of methods to help families be a part of the solution. We also believe we should intervene on behalf of children when the family's ability or willingness to respond is compromised. We know that our ability to support those children who in fact need to be removed from a family, when that is the unfortunate outcome of our assessment, that outcome requires us to look at the adequacy of our foster care system. I simply want you to know that we know that, but that we have not, as of yet, in our task force, addressed these issues, and they are not spoken to in this initial bill. I will review the preliminary recommendations for change that are articulated in Senate File 4 in this bill for your consideration. But first, I wanted Senator Rosen to have an opportunity to address you because she's been an active and important representative for our Senate in the Governor's Task Force on Child Protection.
Thank you. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you, Senator Sharon. It's hopefully many of you have the opportunity to sit with your colleague across the aisle at the testifying table in a very important issue such as this. It's an honor to serve with Senator Sharon and to do the work with this task force members. And we have been working very, very hard. And these folks have traveled from all across the state to come and work on this issue that demands our attention. And so with that, I feel that I'd like to say a special thank you to the governor for pulling the task force together, to the Commissioner Jessen and Commissioner Carter, who chair the task force, and to all the other members that have come a long ways and devoted their time and attention to this issue that is the utmost, I think, probably one of the signature pieces that needs to be done this year. Because if you sat in our task force subcommittees and you heard of the trials and tribulations that these folks face every day because of lack of funding or lack of communication or just the sheer size of the demand that is pressed on this system, it's humbling. It does take you to your knees. And we don't deal with it on a daily basis, but it is our opportunity today, this first hearing with this bill, to really make a difference. And, of course, our job is ongoing from this, but this bill is extremely important. I also like to just make a shout out to Jamie Sorensen. He's our DHS point guard in our sub-task force with Supreme Court Justice Blatz, and he's truly amazing. So there's many people to thank here, but again, this has no boundaries. This is not a partisan issue. This is something that we should all join hands and really work towards making the system better. And I'd like to thank all the other people that work in this system throughout the state, too. They've done an amazing job, but we can do better for those children. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Sharon, before you go further, would you like to offer your author's amendment?
Yes. The A4 is a delete-all amendment that I'd like to present to the committee. While you're looking at that, I'd like you to know that you also have in your packet of material a list of the task force recommendations. And in it, Ms. White so graciously and effectively has articulated where those recommendations are in the bill itself. They reference you to where you can find the language in the bill that relates to that recommendation. And I also want you to know that this delete all amendment does a couple things. First of all, we had two hearings, if you remember. The first hearing, the task force reviewed all of the recommendations that were put in front of the governor, and some of those are yet in process, so are not the subject of this bill. The second hearing, we asked the testifiers to talk on the recommendations that are presently in this bill, included in the delete all amendment. So the last hearing that we had spoke to all of the elements that are in this bill. during that hearing time. And I had a request from Senator Benson to maybe separate those things out, but I'm not sure I'll exactly be able to do that. So I wanted to assure you that you did in that hearing review every recommendation that is in this delete all amendment.
Thank you. Senator Sharon moves the A4 amendment. Do all members have copies of the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, thank you. So now I'll just move through the bill, or through the delete all amendment, A4 delete all amendment. Section 1, which you'll find on page 1 of the bill, modifies the public policy statement. You'll see that on lines 1.10. And in that, we modify the statement by striking language that the family assessment is the preferred response to alleged maltreatment reports and providing that the health and safety of children must be paramount as its concern, and it's the intent of the legislature primarily to protect children and promote safety. This change emerged as a result of a great deal of testimony, more testimony than I think we would ever have time to present in a committee hearing, but showed us that language that gave family assessment a preferred approach that we discovered in the evaluation of the system that sometimes it was used when in statute it was inappropriate for use because it was used in sometimes when there was substantial child endangerment. And we are not making any statements in this bill to take away the utilization of family assessment, but simply the language that says ahead of time that it is the preferred response. Section 2 of the bill amends the definition of physical abuse. This modifies the definition, which under current law provides that an action listed under Section 2 is not reasonable or moderate if it's done in anger or without regard to the child's safety. And the amendment simply strikes that qualifying language. It is based on a clear description of what is, it is in it, the language is reflected in the language of the bill, not portions that we're changing, but it's here, that are clearly inappropriate, not reasonable, and not moderate. Whether done in anger or done simply out of entertainment. Section 3 amends the head note to reflect the content of the subdivision, strikes language that is moved to another section in the bill, and adds a paragraph that references that the language is moved to Section 7. So this Section 3 and Section 4 are both about taking language and moving it to another portion of the bill. What has happened is that because it's referenced several times, subtle differences in the language have created confusion at times at the county level, so it has been put in a single place with clear articulation and language. So that's Sections 3 and 4. Section 5 of the bill, the language starts, I think, on page 9.26. Just reference you as to where I am going. This allows an agency receiving a report, this is in the initial screening period, to consider collateral information as narrowly defined in this subdivision and consider previous reports that were not accepted for investigation or assessment when they make their screening decisions. So it strikes language passed in the last legislative session prohibiting the use of screened out reports that were not accepted for assessment or investigation. All right, let's see if there's anything more. It also includes language providing for certain information regarding the disposition of reports to be given to the reporters. This emerged out of concern from reporters that they simply were not informed as to what the outcomes were in relationship to their concerns for children. And this language was in an earlier section moved from, is that correct? Maybe I could ask Ms. White to speak about the movement in the bill and organization.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the language that's reflected on lines 10.14 through 10.20 is moved from Section 3, Paragraph D. And the reason it was moved is because it's just a more appropriate place in statute to reference the what the reporters will, the information they'll receive.
So we will talk about that again in Section 8, correct?
Yes, that deals with data too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, Section 6, this language requires child protection workers to follow the guidance that will be provided in the child maltreatment screening guidelines when screening reports. And they must implement updated screening procedures and protocols. It also has language that requires that any modifications to the screening guidelines by the counties should be run through and approved by the Commissioner of Human Services. This emerges out of our desire and overall goal of the task force to get consistency throughout the state in terms of the application of efforts towards child protection and safety. Section 7 moves existing language from Section 3 to this subdivision, requiring law enforcement and local welfare agencies to notify each other orally and in writing upon receipt of a report. This moves language. It's not new language. It moves language. One modification, however, to this language is clarifying that a report includes those that were not accepted for assessment or investigation. The law enforcement and local welfare agencies are required to designate a person responsible for ensuring that notification duties are carried out. Section 8 of the bill strikes language that allows counties to modify. So this is in relationship to an earlier requirement that has the Department of Human Services establishing guidelines and counties implementing those protocols and not changing the baseline. They can do greater service, but no less than the essential basic guidelines. Section 9 authorizes it amends the law, but authorizes the release of relevant private data. Relevant is important here. To mandated reporters with ongoing responsibility for the child to require the release of data to a mandated reporter who made the report unless the agency determines that providing the data would not be in the best interest of the child. How is this different? In the past, they could report the status of the report. And this would be more information other than whether the report had been ruled in or ruled out. It might include some information about some efforts towards supporting services for the family. Section 10 requires the local welfare agency to consult with a county attorney to determine the appropriateness of a filing of a CHIPS petition. If the family does not comply with the plan, in family assessment, remember, it's an assessment that's done and then a set of services offered to the family to support them to modify the circumstances or the conditions that may be creating the problem of not being dressed appropriately for the weather or not getting to doctor appointments or time. Dealing with maybe the social service needs, it's a plan, a workout plan to achieve that or maybe to improve some communication skills. But those services are voluntary. So this requires the local welfare agency to consult with the county attorney to determine the appropriateness of filing a CHIPS petition under a couple of circumstances. If the family does not comply with a plan for child protective services or if voluntary services are inadequate to provide sufficient protection for the child. Section 11 requires all reports, which include reports that were not accepted for assessment or investigation, family assessment cases, and investigation cases that did not result in a finding of maltreatment, to be maintained by local welfare agency for 5 years. This in the past, I think it was 1 year. This is an increase from 1 year to 5 years. It also requires a documentation at this time by the agency to indicate why the report was not accepted for assessment or investigation. Section 12 of the bill requires the commissioner to develop a plan to perform quality assurance reviews of the county screening protection practices and decision, and to provide oversight and guidance to ensure what we're trying to achieve, which is consistent application of screening guidelines, a thorough and appropriate screening decision making, and correct documentation and maintenance of reports. The commissioner must also produce an annual report to the legislature of these reviews that it does, and it would be given to the ranking chairs and minority members of the appropriate legislative committees. Section 13 requires the commission to update the child maltreatment screening guidelines by August 1st of 2015 and require agencies to consider prior reports that were not accepted for assessment or investigation when screening a new report. This section also requires the commissioner to publish and distribute the updated guidelines by September 30 of 2015. So these are dates for implementation. And I just might say as an aside that one of the recommendations is to remove the language that we passed last year, which directs counties to not consider prior screening reports when making determinations or doing an assessment. I intend, and Senator Rosen, haven't mentioned this to you, but I know that she supports this, because of these deadlines that we're putting on here for completion of this, of the elements of this bill that will require some work on the part of DHS, the consideration of screened out reports does not require anything in terms of finances or changes to DHS. So we're going to bring that through separately and hopefully have that it can be implemented upon completion, upon passage through the House and the Senate, rather than waiting for these lengthy deadlines in order to implement something that we know everybody would like to see happen quickly. Section 14 requires the commissioner to establish requirements for competency-based initial training and support, continuing education for child protection supervisors. I want to emphasize that right now supervisors are not engaged in being informed or educated in the issues and the best practices for child protection. So this is an initial effort. There may be more coming on training and supervision. And Section 15, our revisor instructions. So with that, unless Senator Rosen would like to add something at this time, I have completed the presentation of the bill.
Okay. Do you have, I see we have a couple testifiers listed. Did you wish to bring them forward
please
at this time?
And you could introduce them for me.
We have Assistant Commissioner Jim Koppel from DHS, Children and Family Services, and Stacy Hannon, Social Services Director in Grant mm-hmm. County. Good afternoon. Assistant Commissioner, if you introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Hi, I'm Jim Koppel, Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services. I will be brief. Senator Sharon has described the bill very well, and there may be some technical elements that we'll talk about that could be made to the legislation that from a policy point of view and the changes that are made, we do support feel that these are all doable. Certainly a tight time frame, but doable.
Thank you. Ms. Hennen, do you?
Madam Chair and the members of the committee, my name is Stacy Hennen, and I'm the Social Services Director.
Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you pull the microphone closer, please?
You almost hit it.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm the Social Services Director for Grant County and the 2015 President for the Minnesota Association of County Social Services Administrators, SOMAXA. MACSA represents the Human Services Directors for all of Minnesota's 87 counties. So thank you for the opportunity to put a county perspective on Senate File 4. As one of the county representatives on the governor's task force on the protection of children, I want to assure the committee that counties are full partners in seeking substantive changes that will strengthen Minnesota's child protection system. As counties, we believe changes to the system should build upon the strengths that are already present in the system and look at what's already working well, as we do believe that there are a lot of things working well in the current system. While there are many details to work out, we're hopeful that the counties will be able to support many of the recommendations coming from the governor's task force. We want to give a consistent message, however, that you're going to hear from us about our support requiring resources to implement reforms. We anticipate significant local fiscal impacts from the recommendations coming forward from the task force. Moreover, currently, counties fund over 50% of all child protection services, and the state funds approximately 20%. This is one of the lowest levels of state investments in the nation. So if Minnesota wants to see a strengthened child protection system, the level of state investment needs to change. County support of the task force recommendations is going to ultimately turn on this issue for us. A couple of the things in the report we want to comment on specifically. The screened out reports, we support having the ability to consider screened out reports and previous reports when making a decision. We would like to continue to exercise caution in the use of past reports. We want to make sure we're not exacerbating the racial and economic disparities that currently exist in the system. So anything we do needs to have that eye on it as well. Counties support the concept of being able to seek collateral information when making screening decisions. We have a lot of staff who say, if I could have just made that one more phone call or asked that one more question, that would have helped in our screening. But again, we also want to make sure that the parameters are appropriate in terms of what information we release and what data we release. We believe limiting collateral contacts to mandated reporters would be most appropriate. Release of data to mandated reporters. We support efforts to increase the sharing of information with mandated reporters. Information sharing leads to increased transparency. We also, however, appreciate the language that allows counties to retain the authority to use discretion in sharing information when it may not be in the best interest of the child to do so. We support the mandate to follow the state screening guidelines when considering reports. We also support clarification in statute that requires consultation with the county attorney. Counties believe that best practice should include a consultation with the county attorney when a family isn't cooperative with the agency. And we support enhanced training and core competency capabilities for supervisors as well as for child protection staff. We also welcome a strengthened role for our partners at the Department of Human Services, not only in oversight but in guidance and assistance. We want to see more consistency across the state, and we think that that would help us achieve that. So I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to Senate File 4, and I can answer questions if there are any.
Thank you. Senator Sharon, did you have any other remarks at this time, or should I open it to the committee
Not
for questions?
Not at this time. Okay. Open it to questions, or?
Members, any questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question for Ms. Hinnan. And first, let me say that I really appreciate this report and the speedy nature in which it's been taken up. And Senator Sharon, the thoughtful presentation that you gave those of us that were not on the committee as this is moving forward. And I just had one question for Ms. Hinnan. You had mentioned that there is a financial cost to counties, and you're anticipating coming back to discuss that or submitting some appropriations requests for that. Could you tell me, though, just with the bill that's before us, which is not all of the governor's task force recommendations, I don't believe, but for the scope of the bill that is before us, could you identify what additional costs might be incurred at the county level?
Ms. Hinnan. Please introduce yourself for the record. I'm sorry.
Stacey Hannon from Grant County. I think that from the bill right now, the goal is to make sure that screening is more accurately occurring, which means we need more expertise in that screening. So that means a level of training for staffing. I also think that the cost of training is significant when we send staff to the training, that takes them out of our county. It also takes time away from their current work. We value it, but it requires, there's a loss to our agency that we have to make up somewhere, and whether that be an increased workloads elsewhere. But I think that the overall goal is to hope that Minnesota screens in more reports. And if Minnesota screens in more reports, we need staff to be able to respond to those reports and respond in an appropriate timeline. So really, our primary concern of this is the screening. You know, I couldn't tell you for sure if law enforcement or county attorneys will feel that there's a cost to it. But certainly, I think for us, it'll be the staff time.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, thank you, Ms. Hennen. I spent about 4 hours with Olmsted County Child Protection Services, and I saw the thoroughness and the time and the expertise that these individual cases that they were starting the process with as I was there that morning transpired. And it did make me realize that not every county in the state has those resources to do that very in-depth analysis and screening. And so I understand why there would be additional needs for that. I can say I saw that it was very effective, but also that it was very labor-intensive. So thank you.
Members, any other questions? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure who to address the question to, but on page 10, starting line 15, any person mandated to report shall receive a summary. Again, remind me of how we're setting boundaries on that. I had asked the question before, and I'd just like to review it one more time. It's not just, I want to be certain, because I'm not familiar with the language, that we're talking about the limited case contact that Senator Sharon had referred to in a previous hearing. When a child has a report, say by a teacher, who else is included as a mandated reporter that would receive copies of that report?
Senator Sharon?
The legislation, I don't know if it's in this section, a person who is not a mandated reporter any person who is not mandated to report shall, upon request to the local welfare agency, receive a concise summary of the disposition. So it is the mandated reporter, the teacher, for example, who made the report, and then the social service agency may, because of their knowledge of that has emerged as a result of assessment, determined that it might be of benefit for another person who's in the business of taking care of this child, whose welfare is in their care, like a physician, or another person who would benefit from knowing that we are concerned about the child and that they should be alert and attending to the best interests of the child. And maybe I could turn this over to Ms. Hennen if she might be able to give more specific examples.
Ms. Hennen.
A mental health professional would be one, too. If we received a report from a mental health professional, this would allow us to contact the teacher then with that report and ask the teacher to be on the lookout for certain behaviors or for certain concerns or issues. I do think that there should be limitations to this. I think it needs to really be about the best interest of the child and the safety of the child. But mandated reporters include, you know, personal care attendants, physicians and nurses, mental health practitioners, teachers in schools, law enforcement, all those kinds of entities.
And Senator Benson. Madam Chair, Senator Sharon and Ms. Hennen, that was my question. It doesn't feel like there are boundaries hinted at in this language, and so I don't want to go into conspiracy land where everybody in the county who's a mandated reporter would be informed about a child, but I want some understanding as to what the real world would look like in this situation. How large would the scope be for a mandated reporter, the mandated reporter net, I guess.
And I think that's fair. We're working on defining better definitions that will come forward, but there is language in here that relies on the professional expertise of the social worker in the county to say in the best interest of the child. So it is narrowed. The language does narrow it. That's unless the release would be detrimental to the best interest of the child. So what that's what the consideration is. Is there another mandated reporter out there that, like a teacher, that when we get a report from a mental health worker, we might just alert them to this so that they can help us, particularly if it's a screened out report.
Senator Lori,
I think a lot of these things we'll be looking to work with the Department of Human Services to provide guidelines around it, because I agree, we do want guidelines, because that's also going to promote consistency, and we want to maintain and protect privacy as well as ensure safety.
Thank you.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And sort of in the same vein, and I did actually find a cross-reference for the collateral information that's allowed to be sought. There's actually a list back, so on page 9,
yes.
Is where you see the reference to the collateral information, and it has then you can the caseworker would be allowed to ask questions of individuals under subdivision 10, paragraph 1, clause 3, item 3. So I went digging for that, and I found that on page 16, which includes, you know, the ability to interview child's caretakers, including the child's parents, guardians, foster parents, child care providers, teachers, counselors, family members, relatives, and other persons who may have knowledge regarding the alleged maltreatment and the care of the child. And so we were asking about, you know, how were we going to put some of this data sharing in a box? And it's not a very well-defined box. At that. I mean, so that's not the mandated report. That's not narrowing the mandated reporters, but, I mean, this collateral information is one that was also of so, – and judiciary will look into this, I'm certain. It's largely a data practices issue. But I did find that actually shed some light on some of the same issues that we were asking questions about as well.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
This is some of the work out of the subcommittee that I sat on, and it's as Ms. Broomfield testified earlier to your question, Senator Benson, it is all those under the purview of the child protection plan that is developed too that will have access to it. And of course, you know, we've talked that the data privacy is an issue, but again, under the best interest of the child, but anybody who's is a part of that child protection plan.
Senator Benson. And may I add to that before you go
Senator
on,
Senator Sharon?
The issue, let's see, we want to increase the capacity of the assessment, the initial assessment, to understand the full environment and potential environment that is unhealthy or is of endangerment for a child. So we want to create the capacity to gather that information, and we want to be able to give feedback to people that have given us that information, because when they appeared in front of us, they experienced some anxiety and mistrust of the system, or they would go back and try to get further information rather than just have something disappear on them. But when there are reports to be made that release that data, we're wanting it to be more than, we haven't figured this language out, but we'll work on it before we get to judiciary, more than just the narrow focus of the specific complaint that came in, but not so broad as to be in the universe. We want to allow the person to analyze a broader sense of the, if it's not this, maybe it's something else, like there's excessive alcoholism, you know, drinking, and I don't know what it is, but it might not have been the subject of the specific report. The child came looking very tired, and then collateral information gives us a little better picture. So then we report back what of that goes back to the mandated reporter. Defining that a little more clearly, not just saying, no, we found the child was sleeping adequately, would be an inadequate response back to the reporter. We want to report back more to help them understand what we've determined and what the intervention will be.
Assistant Commissioner, did you have a further?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. To Senator Benson's point and Senator Lori, I think a great deal of responsibility is going to come to the department to clarify exactly what those protocols are and best practice, and to assure that we use due diligence in how who's contacted and why and how that's documented, and so that it's not only uniform throughout the state, but it clarifies some of these concerns. And I don't, I can't articulate it today as to exactly, but it would carry the legislative intent into reality. So it's got to have that, those pieces to it, and we plan to do that.
And I just one final comment on that. It's in the task force, the thing we're struggling with is a child first, so then there are other issues of concern, data privacy, a series of other things that are very important to us. So what is that movement that we can make that we haven't shut down the system because of these other issues, so much that we have child protection workers not fully aware of what the system situation is and making decisions that do not protect the child's well-being? How can we expand the capacity to do that job? And it may move over a little bit into taking more risk on data privacy, but we're going to try to respect that, but child's safety first in mind, having child safety first in mind.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. A lot of this work did come out of the issue of neglect, which is extremely tough to narrow down. And so that's where it's really important to have that collateral information to make sure that the dots are connected, because we had built a system of silos where no information was shared. When you're talking neglect, you don't have a physical bruise. You don't have, you know, a slap on the face. You have neglect. So it's, you know, the... It's not as clearly defined as perhaps we're comfortable with, but you should sit in the hearings and sit in the subcommittees and the task force and hear some of these cases, and you go, then we have to work harder on this part.
Senator Benson, did you?
And Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, it sounds like there's a lot of gray, a lot of fuzzy edges to this section, and it sounds like you're going to be doing more work before judiciary. And Mr. Koppel, it sounds like you're going to have a lot of work on this section. I feel like we've discussed it extensively here, and we're all on the same page that this isn't exactly right, and we might not get it legislatively exactly right.
That's right.
But I don't want our counties to have more cost than we need, and we protect the privacy of individuals impacted by this until finding that place, I think, it is going to be iterative, to say the least. So thank you for the time on this.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good work. It was from the shout-out to people from Senator Rosen to what you're doing, Senator Sharon. This has come around in a long way and reactive appropriately and proactive for the state of Minnesota. Welcome aboard, Assistant Commissioner.
Yeah.
Welcome to DH&S. I mean, that's good to see you there. One question that just seemed to hit me when Senator Lurie was talking, especially on data privacy, is under FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which oversets the educational piece, I noticed there weren't anybody from the educational side. But, Assistant Commissioner, I think going forward, that's going to be something that your department's going to have to look into regarding, because under FERPA, they'll say, no, I can't, because this is data privacy according to the educational needs of a child. And I know there's been a history of those two systems having constant dialogue. So I don't know if maybe you've already had that conversation with Department of Ed, but this is something I think that would help regarding that piece, especially when you're talking about data privacy side of it. And that just struck on me as I was doing that. So,
Assistant Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, one, I don't know the answer to your question, but I also know that it, as a mandated reporter, does bring you into a system that I'm not sure what if it supersedes is a term, as mandated reporters are in that system as well. So, but it's a really good point, because we did hear a lot about the silos of what schools know or a teacher knows, and what a county worker may not know. Or, you know, that there isn't as clear communication there, and to address that.
Senator Wicklund, maybe Ms. White can talk about this. When we were talking about mandated reporters and sending data to the person who presents the report plus other mandated reporters, and talked about how does that data get treated then once it's released to a mandated or non-mandated reporter. How do we contain that? And clearly, we can see that in the place of, if it goes to a physician, privacy data rules apply. The schools, their rules apply. So we think in, based on this list that Senator Laurie was describing, in those cases, we have good containment and control over data matters. It's when it is not in that system that we start to, it's not the school system we're worried about as much as it is a person that's not in a system guided by privacy data rules.
Thank you, Senator Sharon.
Ms. White, would
Thank you, Senator Sharon.
Ms. White, speak to that a little bit? Could I ask Ms. White to speak to that a little bit, please, Senator Wicklund?
Madam Chair and members, data practices is not my area of expertise, but talking to Kathy Pontius, she indicated that a governmental agency is under the Data Practices Act. When a reporter is outside of that umbrella, that's where the concern comes in. And she indicated that she would think about what language she would add to require those mandated, those reporters outside of the Data Practices Act to be required to follow the Data Practices Act. Yeah. So if they do share the data, they cannot do anything with it as under the current system.
And it's interesting, Sharon. I would just add that when you look at that list, outside of the mandated reporters that are guided by privacy laws, whether it's medicine, schools, the others tend to be, that are not under something like that, tend to be family members. So in some ways, we always say it's up to them to decide what they want to tell people or not tell people. But it's not up to us to tell the family story beyond whomever they choose to communicate that information.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Benson.
And not to continue to beat a dead horse, but when we look at page 16, line 5, other persons who may have knowledge regarding the alleged maltreatment and care of the child, a religious ed teacher, somebody at church, they are not under any guidelines at all, but they have regular contact with this child. And so I don't know where the line is, and judiciary's got some work to do, so thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon.
Senator Benson is talking about something that we've been talking about. We see the problem. We understand that a faith community person might be an ideal person to help monitor the well-being of the child, but then we have to figure out how to articulate this and deal with that. Should they be included in the information that we send out to people who are in the world to care for and protect the child? Right. So I appreciate this conversation. We are aware of these issues, and we moved. This will be referred to judiciary, and you can be assured that they will be discussing the same things with you.
Yes. Thank you. Are there additional questions? Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I noticed that Ms. Hennen, when we were talking about some of the changes here, I noticed you kind of mentioned that we want to make sure that we don't exacerbate any of the racial disparities in the system now. And I wrote that down because I thought it was important, but I also wanted to make a suggestion. I've been working with the Council of Black Minnesotans, and I'm on the CLAC board. And one of the things that the councils, we have five councils in our state, that they've continually told me, and I've decided that every time there's an opportunity this session, I'm going to present this idea. We should be talking to those councils about how to reduce these disparities in whatever avenue it is. And so I just kind of throw out that suggestion today as you're working on that to make sure that we look at the councils who actually can have expertise in that area and help us. So thank you.
Any response?
I would agree. I think that's very important that we do whatever we can to take a look at these issues, and that's a good suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping that you all did receive, Senator Rosen asked for some testimony to be sent to all of you. We did that by email, and it was really addressing the very issues that Senator Nelson is talking about, the kind of testimony that we've been hearing in the task forces.
Thank you. Any additional questions?
I'd be happy to renew my motion and have the Senate File 4 pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Thank you. Senator Sharon moves that Senate File 4, as amended, be recommended to pass.
The delete all, or however we say that.
As sure amended, right. Or do I have to say that? We have a person who's indicating that he's interested in testifying. That's okay.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Michael Harrison. I'm a registered lobbyist. I've been lobbying the legislature for the past 7 years on judiciary issues and reform and issues relating to constitutional law. I want to say that this bill, I support it for the most part, but I have a few concerns which I would like to address today. I would like to start which was been moved to Section 6 about the mandatory guidelines for screening reports. The concern I have here is the guidelines that have been drafted. Obviously, we're here talking about this bill today, and it would indicate to me that these guidelines tends to be some problem with, and maybe that there are some things in the guidelines that don't qualify, and I do understand that Section 13 hopefully will address that, and that this, these guidelines are, you know, updated or changed or corrected. And my concern, though, is who is the one that's counseling or giving the direction of what these guidelines should be. I noticed the list of members, and I counted four that were either in the medical community or medical doctors, and then maybe two of them that were educators that educated in human sciences, as like psychology or mental health or something like that. I would like to see more professionals like that be involved if the task force could form a panel or something to review these, and hopefully we can get guidelines that are proper for these guidelines. My second concern is Section 11, which was for the original bill, which has to do with the dates, 4 and 5 years, 1 year. In 2002, my family was subject of a child protection proceeding. And this is the file that is on our family assessment. About 5 years, maybe short of 6 months of 5 years, me and my ex-wife divorced and had a trial. I tried to get a copy of this file, which was probably 80% of it's redacted. Now, my ex-wife suffered from postpartum depression, from bipolar, and a schizophrenic. She had the aid of child protection back in 2002, who left our child in the backseat of the car. Why I became the subject, I don't know. I was hoping to find that in this report, but I didn't find that. And it was often come back to me in family court. And I said, no, hey, wait a minute. I'm concerned for the welfare of my children. And other than what I could find in this report that I may have cussed and sworn in front of my children a few times, and that was a no-no, I can't see anything. There's no indication I hit, beat, did anything to my children, said wrong and inappropriate things other than maybe cussing war once in a while. But my concern is that after receiving this and getting the redaction and going to the courts and everything, by the time that we could get a court order to get the redaction undone and a full report, unfortunately, it was destroyed. And therefore, that information was basically gone. What I would like to see, and I know because when I'm not lobbying here, I'm sitting in courtrooms across the state in both criminal and family courts, observing in what's going on in courts. And I can say there are three times that I have seen cases that have gone almost 20 years between custody of a child. And when these reports and all this information is destroyed in 5 years, which could be very helpful. Because what happened to one of my children, and this is about 8 years after the child report, my daughter was a victim of sexual abuse by a church leader. And if I had been able to have these reports, and I don't know, your guess is as good as mine, maybe I could have had custody. The few times that I was able to have any contact with my children, one time was at a spring concert where I wondered why this gentleman that was my age had this interest in my child. But I was told because I had no legal custody, there's nothing I could do. But hopefully I could have done something if I had the proper information. So what I would like to see is that this information be maintained till the youngest child in the family reaches the age of majority. And yes, I agree. I'm a libertarian, and let me tell you, I have a hard problem with government taking information on private citizens. But when it comes to children, I'd set that aside, especially what after happened to my children. And I think it's very important that this information be allowed and available to the right people. And I'm glad to hear the interest on the data practicing that you just had. And trust me, I will be at the Judiciary Committee, which is where I normally hang out. The third concern I have, this has to do with Section 12. Again, I think it's very great. Last week in the judiciary, there was license readers, and there was a lot of conversation about a private individual doing an assessment report, and then where that information is available. And what I would like to see is that an individual agency, and I don't know exactly who, maybe the state auditor, maybe the legislative auditor, maybe just a private organization. But I would like to see them conducted so that we know that there's transparency, that this is an accurate, more accurate. What I see, and I have to say in my 7 years, I see bureaucracy created down here all the time, and that concerns me. And so I would like to see some independent people do this result, and then it is made public. Now, as far as giving it to the legislatures, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 50 years from now, this law will sit on the books. I'm a paralegal, and I've seen laws on books for the past 100 years that have never been changed. And my concern is, in 20 years, when the majority leader and the minority leaders get this information, they're going to look at it and say, what do I want with this? And so I think that if a legislature wants to report, just as the public, they should have a right to request to see that information. And I'll have my testimony there. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you for providing your testimony today. I don't know. Senator Sharon, do you have any comment?
I think that maybe Mr. Koppel could talk a little bit about who does do the guidelines and how they're created, if he's been in the position.
I'm sorry,
he has left.
I'm sorry, but...
And the expertise that they bring in and the best practices that they bring in order to do that. And we can provide that to the committee. Keeping reports for other purposes, the 5 years is an extension from the 1 year that exists in law right now. But what's being discussed here is the need for the information for other purposes. And I've written that down. We'll take a look at what that might
entail at his request. And then we are having conversations about the review process, whether there should be independent review, a special agency. I've been talking here about having a legislative subcommittee of this committee that will consistently review these reports, because it is a huge subject area, has multiple tentacles to it. We've only talked today about the front end, the assessment process, and how to help our social service system do a better job at screening in and screening out. And we're going to, with future recommendations, look more at the assessment and the investigation process, the tools for that, as well as improving the team approach to evaluating these situations. And then we haven't even begun to talk about, in those very sad situations where we believe we have to intervene very strongly and take the child from the family, whether or not that system is adequately developed and funded and appropriately designed to meet the unique needs of the various communities whose children need support. So that's a future kind of discussion that is still going on, and what is in front of you is really we're trying to break the work down into a progressive process. So otherwise it just is overwhelming. The subject is overwhelming. So I believe we should have a specific subcommittee of this committee that's consistently paying attention to this important subject matter, which is, I think, in line with what our testifier is suggesting to us, that we need, that it doesn't get lost again for 30 years.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we're back at Senator Sharon moves that Senate File 4, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your attention to this over the last three meetings.
Thank you. And that concludes our meeting for today. The meeting is adjourned. Take one.